Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Money Mentor podcast for the Wilson Weekly. Good morning, Doc. Looking ravishing and handsome and intellectual as ever. What are we going to chat about this week?
Oh, thank you very much, Graham. And those inducements I pay you always work, so thank you for the compliments. But
you can slip me 20 later.
Whatever. But thank you for that. And look, it's been a funny weekend, a funny week this week in property. Of course, we had an interruption with public holidays in three of our major auction markets. We had long weekends in Melbourne, in Canberra, and in Adelaide. So Melbourne, it was Labor Day, the Moomba Festival, as it's traditionally called. In Adelaide, it was Adelaide Cup Day. And in Canberra, it was Canberra Day. So those three states all enjoyed public holidays, long weekend, Monday off. And we, you know, we obviously expect maybe not much change, but some change in auction results as a, you know, because of that, because it is a distracted market. We don't get as many listings. But we had some interesting results, which, of course, we'll go through at the end of today's presentation, today's podcast. New South Wales and Queensland, it was the same old for them over the weekend. And Graham, we've had a really strong start to the market this year. We update our data daily, you know, and it's just showing no signs of slowing down. And we thought that, yeah, it would sort of peak out last year and be, a moderate market this year. But, gee whiz, it's still pretty strong. Now, it may be because Easter, and of course, Easter's 2 weeks off now, Graham. So we get more holidays. Those in Victoria, South Australia and Canberra, we'll get another bunch of holidays coming up. So maybe it's sort of squeezed in a little bit of action because we're having an earlier Easter this year. I don't know. We'll find out after Easter's gone. But the clearance rates, the number of sales that are occurring now are actually the strongest we've ever had for this time of the year, particularly in Sydney and Melbourne. And also is very strong for the actual number of properties that are being sold. So buyers have really got a bit of a head of steam up there, Graham, and I guess we could say smaller major markets, if that makes sense, of Adelaide, Perth and Brisbane, they're going gangbusters at the moment, very strong, particularly that Brisbane market just, it's just got so much momentum in it at the moment. We know it was driven by the surge in migration through the COVID lockdown period. But it really hasn't eased off, even though we're not seeing the same, you know, numbers of people flooding into Queensland. Oh, it's still pretty strong. And, we've sort of speculated here, how far away are we from that $1 million median in Brisbane? And it's got about $100,000 to go. But at the rate of growth at the moment, you know, it may get there within the next 12 months. It's quite extraordinary to think that Brisbane would have a $1 million median house price. But it's heading in that direction. And, Adelaide's not too far behind. Who would have thought? But, of course, the lucky ones that have invested over the last few years, they'll be have a nice, relaxed view of the world.
Grinning ear to ear, Doc.
They would be feeling comfortable and relaxed, I think, and which is the way to go. It's all good. The value of property, you know, can you beat property investment? So,
well, it's interesting, Doc, because we heard all of this palaver over the last few. I mean, look, COVID uncertain. You and I, and anyone that's been a loyal listener, and if you're new, I suggest you go back and go back to the beginning. Doc and I kept using the language that the COVID fear and the correction that we thought we'd experience would not be as deep or as steep was the language we kept using, if you recall, Doc.
Yeah.
And we were absolutely right. The data just... yes, corrected a bit, but we really sort of talked about it week on week on week with your live data, and yet we still heard this negativity in the media. We heard the fear mongering, we heard the scare campaigns, but yet again, you've proven everybody wrong with the data. And here we are in probably, not the strongest, but it's a bloody strong market, Doc, as far as how long it's been holding up and its growth rate.
Well, that's right, Graham, and the point is that Australia has this robust and resilient housing market. And, you know, we keep proving that through the cycles. And it doesn't matter what's thrown at us. COVID was, you know, really tough. We know that. But once the lockdown's finished, all that pent-up demand that was created was released, and we've had strong prices growth. And then, of course, we had interest rate increases, you know, a dozen interest rate increases, and yet that didn't slow the market down in the longer term. And now, after having a very strong year last year, 10% growth, catch-up markets in Melbourne and Sydney, they caught up with what they lost in 2022 with the higher rates. They're still going on, and I think that, you know, we've still got some value markets out there at the moment. And I think the Sydney market is a classic example. Even though it did grow plus 10% last year, even though it's growing strongly this year again, prices are still below, Graham, where they were a year ago in Sydney. So, you know, 18 months ago. So there's still value in that Sydney market, and I think that's part of the reason why it's continuing to attract buyers. And Melbourne, you know, Melbourne's below where it was, and that's been an underperformer, Melbourne, and, you know, a few reasons for that. Perhaps COVID, which we know was very tough down there, the lockdowns in Melbourne. But still, Melbourne's got to recover a bit from that, I guess, feeling of negativity and lack of confidence. You know, its economy, unfortunately, is the worst. It's the worst performing state in Australia, the Victorian economy. But the other things that are positive for Victoria are, and we don't really mention this, but for Melbourne still is providing around 40% of all the new dwellings coming out of the capital cities, Graham. So it's actually, of all the markets, it's the most positive for supply, which is so bad in the other capitals, of course. So maybe its position, demand versus supply, is a little better than the other capitals. But I do think that Melbourne market will pick up eventually. It's early signs already. Particularly also given that it will be a force with migration. You know, Melbourne's always a key target for migration. Let's hope the government doesn't fiddle too much with that, because that's only a short-term sort of non-solution if you do try to stop you know, migration to ease rent and house price growth. But as I said, I think we're just keeping on keeping on in terms of our housing market. And when we talk about investors, I mean, not only have investors, you know, had the gains that we've just described over the past year, but also so capital growth, but they've also had good return on income, you know, in terms of rent returns, right? So sure it's like in Sydney, Brisbane, in Perth, Brisbane, and Adelaide, Graham, if we put gross yields together with capital growth over the past year, it's plus 20%. You know, where do you get plus 20% these days, you know, on your investment? So not only are you getting your capital growth, you're also getting increased rental growth. And those yields in Brisbane and Perth particularly, and Adelaide, are high. And what they look like is, oh, hey, the asset price is too high, you know, it's got to come down because it's so much higher than the other capitals. Than other capitals, but the point is that growth is continuing, rental income. So it's like it's the perfect world. Your property value, your assets are increasing, but the return on it is also increasing. So you're maintaining those 6% and 7% yields, right?
Yeah.
And there's just no end in sight, as we discussed last week, to the rental crisis that we have here. And it's not extravagant language. I'm not clickbaiting. You know, it's clearly a position Australia has where they don't have enough supply to match demand. And, you know, it's affecting our rental market severely.
Yeah, absolutely, Doc. Hey, it's a good time. It's a very, very, very tough time to be a tenant. Very tough. But it's a good time to be an investor. If you've taken that risk, the rewards are there right now. So, but why don't we let's jump in, Doc, and have a look at the numbers, because as always, keen to see what you've produced live, and it's up to date and it's always accurate, which is very important. So let's rip in.
Yeah, well, we've had a bit of a preview today again, Graham, of the big picture we've discussed the big picture in our housing markets. Buyers are still up and about, prices are rising just about everywhere, and the rental market's still very, very tough. So we've got some data to sort of reinforce that, our latest data. It is for the week ending Wednesday, March the 13th. Now, normally, Graham, for this week, we would be discussing the latest interest rate results because Reserve Bank meets on the first Tuesday of every month. Well, it used to, but it's not doing that anymore, the Reserve Bank. It's all sort of changed. So the Reserve Bank will meet next Tuesday for its March meeting rather than the first Tuesday of the week. It's now the third Tuesday of the week that the Reserve Bank will be meeting to make its decision on rates. It won't have a meeting at all in April. Maybe that makes some sense to some degree because the March meeting's later. April is the holiday month, you know, Anzac Day, Easter, typically. It's a bit of a distracted month. Doesn't mean that things wouldn't change that you'd need to perhaps review interest rates, but it is what it is. Then they'll be meeting again in May, early in May and then later in June. So that's how they're sort of managing it at the moment. They're switching around the Tuesdays, and then when they have two in a row, they then miss the next one, the third one. So we will have the latest interest rate data next week, Graham. So we're not really light on today. We've got some interesting news anyway, which does relate to interest rates in the housing market, as we're always discussing. Just a little bit off the hot off the press, Graham, and we'll discuss this next week. The latest US inflation data came out today, and it's actually showed a bit of an uptick in inflation in the US. And they're sort of realising, I think they always realise that oil is a key to this, and oil has been rising recently. But its inflation decline has eased, and the inflation rate actually picked up slightly with their latest data. So the chat about cutting rates has certainly ended in the US, which we've discussed was a little hysterical. Now maybe that'll work its way into the narrative from the Reserve Bank, but just a bit of a heads up there for the US inflation scene. And I think that has some relevance to Australia, of course, where we'll probably see a similar uptake when we get our next inflation data out. So let's have a look at the latest data, Graham. We're going to look at home lending today, the latest house building costs, and we're going to have a quick look at the latest regional house prices as well, and of course those auction results. So a little bit relevant in terms of the what we're discussing about our housing markets. Surprisingly, perhaps the latest ABS home lending data, which was for January, did show another fall. That's the second month in a row we've had a fall in home lending. A little bit counterintuitive because we have had, you know, continuing strong results in terms of house price growth in our housing markets January, but it was January. You know, maybe some seasonal effects there with lower volumes. Although, you know, this is supposed to be seasonally adjusted, this data. We've discussed how the ABS is having problems with its seasonal adjustment models. So maybe we have to take this with a grain of salt to some degree. But nonetheless, I think the interesting part was when we look at the breakdown of buyer types with the latest data, we saw total owner occupiers. They were down quite sharply. Investors eased. But what was really interesting, Graham, was we've seen another surge in first home buyers. So first home buyers are actually moving against the trend at the moment. And why wouldn't they? You think about it, if you're a first home buyer at the moment, what you are confronting. You're confronting this remarkable rental market, crazy low record vacancy rates, rents rising annually at 10, 15, 20, 25%, as well as the strongest inflation, even though it has improved. Prices have increased over the past year or two at the highest rate we've seen in decades. And the worst news, of course, for first-time buyers is they're seeing prices rise. And that really kills them, you know, when they see, oh, God, you know, the house has gone up another 50 grand that I was thinking of buying. You know, there's all these bidders at the auctions. It's getting tougher and tougher. So this is obviously providing a motivating force for first-home buyers to get into the market. And I think we'll see that continue. And you can see on the trends that first-home buyers went against the overall numbers and increased for over the month. Western Australia again, and these monthly data figures are a little volatile because it is January, of course. But when we look over the past year, we've certainly seen an increase in the year, which is not surprisingly because we've had a strong year for the housing market generally. We've seen an increase in home lending. No surprise that the big three there, Queensland, South Australia and Western Australia, have had the biggest increase in home lending over the past year. And of course, Adelaide, Brisbane and Perth have been the strongest growing housing markets in terms of price growth. So that's reflected there quite clearly with that data. And it sort of matches more or less to the sort of prices growth that we have seen. But as I said, I think the key messages there have been from the first home buyer data. Let's go back here for our first home buyer data. So I'm getting a little bit of a lag here, but we'll go forward. So again, reinforcing what we were discussing before, Graham, housing markets are strong. Plenty of motivation for buyers out there generally, but no doubt first home buyers are feeling the pinch with those higher rents, higher prices, higher prices generally, and higher house and unit prices as well. Mm. And when we look at our auction markets, there's plenty of competition there. So they're in the queue now trying to secure a property. So they're doing everything they can, I guess, to get into the market. Now, one of the key drivers of inflation is house building costs. My housing market runs a monthly house building cost index. We've been tracking that. Of course, we had a remarkable surge in house building costs following the previous government's home builder package during COVID. Created lots and lots of demand. Well, it brought forward a lot of demand. And of course, we couldn't match supply with it. So house building costs went through the roof. That is an important factor for interest rates because the ABS inflation model is significantly contributed to by housing. And the two main factors, or the two principal factors, or really the only factors for housing that's considered by the ABS are rents. And we know what's happened to rents recently and have been a big contributor to higher inflation. And house building costs, not apartment building costs, but house building costs. So they're the key components now. One of the factors that's eased inflation recently has been that we've started to see house building costs fall, or not falling, but the rate of growth declining. However, that's sort of gone the other way, Graham, which isn't good news in terms of inflation and certainly in terms of resupplying our undersupplied housing market. So we can see a big pickup there in the index over January compared to February, which is a concern because the trend had started to ease recently. But when we look at the annual growth rate, and that's what the inflation rate reflects, is the annual growth rate, the recent declines, which have been steady and have certainly come down significantly from their peaks, have now reversed, Graham, over January, which isn't good news. So annual house building costs are now up by 7.5% over January. For the year ending January, certainly well down on where they were a year ago, where they were rising over the year at 16.9%. So, look, hey, that's a big drop, and that's good news. And look how high it was at its peak. It was 23.3%. So no wonder we were getting high inflation, you know, because it's a significant factor.
Yeah.
And of course, it's the complete opposite to what we need at the moment, which is more, more units, more houses being built. And as we saw last week with the building approval data, you know, house building was down by nearly 10% over January, which we know apartment development approvals come and go. There can be big ones one month and smaller, you know, not so big the next month. So it's up and down. But house building tends to be more stable because numbers are much smaller, you know, as they come through. It's not typically a 2,000 unit apartment development, which you can get. But this is just another roadblock where you're seeing house building costs rising over the year up to 7.5%. So let's hope that this is a blip and that we can resume our downward trend, which was quite, you know, positive. We were seeing the rate of growth grow. But you look back to the pre-COVID period, Graham, and typically house building costs were like 1 or 2% a year. You know, very competitive industry. And, you know, that's part of the competitiveness was because house building costs were quite stable and predictable. So unfortunately, we're well ahead of that. And it's just another negative in terms of the outlook for more building, which we need, you know, desperately in terms of resupplying our housing market. So not good news there, and not good news also in terms of the outlook for interest rates, Graham, as well. So
no,
so house building costs are a concern. We're going to look at the regional market results just quickly, Graham. This is the latest regional market performance. When we look at the top performers in New South Wales, Wollongong up and running. Look at that, 16.4% growth over the past year. Your old hometown.
The Gong. We need to put Dapto in there for Shazza and Dazza, my mum and stepdad, because Dapto's growing bigger than Dubbo, I reckon.
Well, you know, they still run the dogs at Dapto, but... I think it's all that vibe around that area is all very positive and
I'll tell you another one, Doc. You look at Shell Harbour, little old Shell Harbour there, coming in under the 900,000. You got the new Shell Cove Marina there. It's going to be like a new Airlie Beach. Like, watch this space, the Gong.
Yeah, that's right. And south of Sydney's always had that value aspect. A funny thing, south of Sydney, Graham, and I think Wollongong's basically a suburb now. Anyway, what is it? It's about a 15-minute drive now outside once you leave the city limits of Sydney. 15 minutes on a freeway and you're at Wollongong.
Blink and you miss it.
Yeah, and then you just put it into neutral going down the hill, right? And that's 5 minutes and you're there. But I shouldn't say that. That encourages people. But, it's not very strong there in Wollongong. And it's a value market. I mean, still 1.1 million. It's a lifestyle market, considered a lifestyle market. It is a gateway to the south, as you mentioned, with Shell Harbour and Shoalhaven also performing reasonably well. Some good results there in the south of Sydney. It's funny, the south of Sydney is always a bit, even though it has a wonderful, lifestyle profile, the south of Sydney, the Southern Highlands going down along the coast. It's always been not as highly regarded as north of Sydney. And I think it's because maybe they feel it's not as warm, the beaches aren't as good, but it's actually, a little bit of a misconception, I think. And I think there's always those value aspects, that are active for those that are moving to the south of Sydney. And as I said, Wollongong, over $1 million median again, and up by 16.4% over the year. I think the number two is interesting, Graham, and I think this is part of that Tweed energy that we have. The Gold Coast energy we have with the Tweed, which is obviously part of the Gold Coast in a sense, up by 15.1% over the year, which is sort of similar to what we're seeing, which we'll look at in a sec, what we're seeing from those Queensland, Southeast Queensland regions. Quite reasonable results there. Albury and Wagga Wagga just eased a little bit after strong recent growth and reflecting their, more value-oriented, lower median house prices. But a bit of a surprise there is Ballina down by 5.1%. Maybe some volatile data coming through on that, but it doesn't really reflect what's happened on the Tweed. But the Tweed is really a part of Greater Gold Coast to some degree,
As Wollongong is Sydney, and Central Coast is the Tweed the Gold Coast, really.
That's right. Now, Victoria, certainly the regions in Victoria are mainly down. The lower priced areas, and that again, because prices are lower, you get some volatility from period to period. Shepparton and Latrobe are certainly the amongst the lowest priced LGAs, major LGAs in Victoria. Bendigo up a little bit, starting to catch Ballarat. They sort of move in basically in tandem, one takes over from the other, typically from period to period, but Bendigo up by 3.2%, all the rest down. Still some weakness in prestige property in Melbourne, Graham. Mornington Peninsula has been a little flat for a while. And the Surf Coast, after very strong growth, is also a little flat. But you've got to understand, this is the quieter part of the year. It is the first 2 months of the year that we're looking at here. And of course, there's not a lot of prestige property that is sold during that period. Typically, although, you know, the Surf Coast and the Mornington Peninsula can be exceptions because they're seaside regions, but certainly not as strong performance as the New South Wales regions, no surprise there. But hey, look at Queensland. When we look at the Queensland regional results, they're you know, going through the stratosphere, Graham. Very strong results right across the board, with the exception of the Fraser Coast, which was up by just 2.7% over the year. But the big performer, Rockhampton, 21.8. Toowoomba, Graham, up 21% over the past year. Wow, that's a big, big number. And basically the strongest in Queensland with Rockhampton. Townsville finally starting to move upwards, but still a very low median there, 499. Can you believe 499 median house price in Townsville, Graham? No wonder it's risen 18%. Gee, how low is that? Noosa's strong lifestyle market. Tracking the Gold Coast there. Gold Coast now has a median house price of $1 million, Graham. So the Gold Coast has now hit that seven-figure mark. So, again, the Gold Coast is proving to be a winner chicken dinner over the last couple of years and continuing to rise.
There's an interesting undertone here, Doc, that these top performers are all pretty much from Sunny Coast up, excluding Fraser. Sunny, Mackay, yeah. Bundy, Cairns, Goldie, they're all 10 or well above, 10 to mid 15, 20%.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good return for a regional at those price points for a lot of them.
And this is the Queensland energy, Graham, you know, and it started off with that migration surge, but the Queensland energy is almost across the board and people are discovering it. But I think it's, well, we mentioned Townsville, you know, nice to see Townsville prices starting to rise again. Let's hope there's some consistency there. But Townsville's median is still well over 100,000 less than Cairns. Cairns' median is now over 600,000 and Townsville's still under 500,000. They used to track each other, Graham. In fact, Cairns was higher. Townsville was higher than Cairns, typically.
It's good to see Cairns get some bang. It's good, Doc, for Cairns to get some bang for buck again, because, I mean, you could go buy a unit for $200,000-$300,000 there a few years. It was just dormant. It just subdued for a while there. It was real holiday-y, touristy, but it's really starting to get some traction and come back into its own. It's good.
Yeah, fabulous place, Cairns. I used to go there frequently, Graham. Fabulous place. The problem that they had with their units particularly was the high cost of cyclone insurance, which, made it was more expensive to pay for the insurance than it was to pay for the unit. But that's sort of moderated now. So, and that's brought that market back. But certainly an ultra lifestyle market there. Subtropical market, and plenty of high-level infrastructure now in and about Cairns. And, of course, there's plenty of focus on one of the world's great tourist spots, you know, Cairns.
Yeah.
So some good results across the board, really, in Queensland. And I think when we look at the regional results in comparison, Graham, it's interesting to see New South Wales, it's solid to strong. Victoria, a little underperforming, you know, only a couple of regions that have had growth. Whereas Queensland is every market there except the Fraser Coast has had double figure growth over the past year, and most of them are actually over 15% growth, Graham, over the past 12 months. So, and again, this is the 3 months till February, so it's a little bit of holiday season stuff, a bit distracted, but that doesn't affect the Queensland market as much as the bigger markets in Melbourne and or Victoria and New South Wales. So you have some, you know, big results continuing. And as I said, the markets there that are adjacent to Brisbane, Toowoomba, the Gold Coast and Noosa are all producing, and Sunshine Coast to a lesser degree, but producing big results, which just shows that energy that's coming out of Brisbane. And as I said, we're likely to see sooner rather than later on current trends, the Brisbane with a median price of $1 million, which we see the Gold Coast now has reached that $1 million median price mark. That's a big number.
Isn't it funny that the Gold Coast got there before Brizzy? Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, well, it's been a boom market. It's been a boom market, and you know, kudos to those that have taken advantage of that. So Tassie, a bit up and down there in Tassie again. Smaller market, we see volatility. Hobart's led over the past year. Glenorchy, the underperformer there, down by 4.6%. Similar results there in the Northern Territory for Darwin and Palmerston. So good to see our monthly catch up with regions. It'll be interesting to see when we get our next month, when we get the seasonal data sort of a little bit more settled. But no doubt it shows the trend that we're already seeing in terms of those capital city markets. And we always say that, that the energy flows outwards from those capital city markets typically. And we certainly see that with those regional results. So as I was saying, Graham, we had a very strong weekend considering holiday distractions, three of our markets. Look at that Sydney numbers again, 847 auctions in Sydney, just down a touch from the weekend before. 74.5% clearance rate. So the clearance rate's still the same old, and that's still good news for sellers, really. You know, that's almost 75% of properties put up under the hammer are being sold. We always mention that the 80% benchmark is what we call a boom. We're not in a boom yet in Sydney, but certainly we're very close to it. But I think what's interesting is when we compare the results from last weekend, Graham, to the same weekend last year, look at that, with 300 more auctions and the clearance rate is, you know, nearly 10% higher than what it was a year ago. So that says it all, just how strong that Sydney market is at the moment. Melbourne, no surprise, down over the long weekend holiday, just 359 auctions. But of course, that followed 1,144 the previous weekend, which was a super Saturday of auctions. But the clearance rate in Melbourne was actually higher, Graham, 67.5% versus 65.4%. That's still a little bit in favour of sellers, I would suggest, Graham, and despite it being that sort of holiday weekend. But once again, when we look back a year, we can see that Melbourne listing 359 last weekend, 276 the same weekend last year, and a similar clearance rate, 68.2%. But we know the Melbourne market hasn't had the energy that the other capital city markets have had, particularly Adelaide, Brisbane and Sydney. So still some solid results there in the Melbourne market, considering it was a holiday weekend. Brisbane down a touch in terms of auction numbers, 69 auctions last weekend, but a very strong clearance rate for Brisbane, 75.4%. Again, three quarters of the offerings clearing, and well ahead of the weekend before and well ahead of the same weekend last year in Brisbane. So still plenty of signs of the strength in that Brisbane market. Adelaide, back to 80% in Adelaide, Graham. We've been wondering where those 80% clearance rates have gone in Adelaide that we got so used to last year. It was sort of ho-hum, another 80% clearance rate in Adelaide. But we've had 70s this year, but now we're back to that 80% plus results in Adelaide from 68 auctions. It was a holiday. That's why the auction numbers were down. But when we look at it compared to the same holiday weekend last year, 57 auctions and a 75% clearance rate. So Adelaide also outperforming over the long weekend there compared to what it did a year ago. But I think the good signs are starting to emerge for Canberra. Canberra's been a market also in the doldrums a little bit, Graham, since the middle of last year. Hasn't typically followed the Sydney market upwards, but it's now starting to show some signs that it's on the move again. So a couple of 65% clearance rates in a row there for Canberra. Yes, numbers were down. It was Canberra Day. But they're still tracking, certainly clearance rates are tracking above where they were a year ago. And as we said, we showed before the results. So far this year, it's been a strong market in Sydney, well ahead of the same period last year. Melbourne, around about the same, a little bit lower in Melbourne. The Brisbane market, well ahead of a year ago. So we know we've been talking about Brisbane and how strong its price results have been. The auction market's validating that. Adelaide now starting to push up towards 80%, and it's also now tracking higher than where it was a year ago. And as I said, some positive signs there for the Canberra market, Graham, where auction clearance rates are tracking higher. As we said before, look out for those auction clearance rates on the LinkedIn account, my LinkedIn account. Saturday, 6:30 p.m., we have the headline results for the capital cities and the full national report out around about 9 a.m. every Sunday. There's a link there for those that want the latest report from the last weekend's holiday market. There's our QR code, which you can get a copy of. And just to finish off, as we do, let's run an ad for that fantastic My Housing Market app. So if you want to know what's happening in your suburb or a suburb that you're interested in, get a hold of that My Housing Market app. There's a QR code there for it. So you can take a picture of that. Now, we must first put in a disclaimer. If you want, it is password protected, and our good friends at Infinity control the password. So if you want access to that that great app, please go through Infinity and they will provide it with you. But this gives you an opportunity to see what's happening in real time in terms of particular suburbs. So what the app does is it shows every suburb in Australia that has data. You can, there's a screenshot of the app. You can filter it for price or rent. You can filter it for the state and regional breakdowns. So what we've done here with the screenshot is we've looking at New South Wales, Sydney. We've filtered that for Blacktown, which is, of course, a big suburb in Sydney. We're looking, we can also filter it for the type of property. You can filter it for a house, for a unit, for a townhouse. So we've filtered that for a house. You can also filter it, Graeme, which is really exciting, for the number of beds. So we're looking at a 5-bedroom house in Blacktown. And then when we search, we get those results, which shows that the median house price currently is $1,245,000, a high of $1,500,000 and a low of $990,000. And there are 9 properties currently for sale. We can do exactly the same thing for rents, which we just did for Blacktown, which shows you've got a median rent in Blacktown there of $600 a week, a high of $700 and a low of $570. And there are 4 houses for rent in Blacktown at the moment. So next week, Graeme, let's wait for those latest RBA interest rate decisions, a little bit late this month because of the change to the market. Let's also have a bit of a chat about the outlook for interest rates this year. So we can see what the RBA, or we can review what the RBA says in its commentary next week following its decision, which I think is a bit of a no-brainer. It'll be on hold. But we'll look at the outlook for interest rates. And what we'll do is we'll go through the key data points and see whether they're positive for rates falling, whether they're positive for rates rising, or whether they're positive for rates staying where they are. So we'll put that discussion together, looking at all those individual points going forward, which I think is a good way to understand where our interest rates are going when we look at all the factors. And we have all the data here that we can do that. Also, we mentioned today in the introduction, Graeme, about those capital city investment returns. Let's have a look at what investment returns are providing for those investors so far this year. Some good news there, let me tell you. And, of course, we finish off with the latest weekend auction results. And if you want to have a look at this report, Infinity will distribute a PDF, but you can also get hold of a PDF copy through that QR code on the screen. So that's all from us, or from me today, Graeme. It's been a bit of an up and down in terms of our issues with the weather, but we have finished on a high point as usual. And I look forward to chatting next week again about what's happening this week in the housing market.
Look forward to it, Doc. And I've got a special request from several people. A few people have asked if you could re-include the Australian housing market capital cities versus the stock market again, please. A few people couldn't locate that, but they've heard about it and they found it quite interesting when they were looking at their superannuation performances and investments, etc.
A little scary.
So I have a special, I've had, I reckon, 20, 30 people in the last week or so send a DM. So I'm going to kindly ask you if we can pop that back in at some point. They found that intriguing, but they couldn't. I can't remember what episode it was either, Doc. Or was it the masterclass?
I think it's a masterclass. We do. We leave the masterclass gets the full breadth of our market, the big bang. So, but we can put that in, and that's, and I think it's appropriate because we are going to look at the investment returns for all the capital cities for both houses and units next week, and that will include gross yields. And capital growth as well. So there's some very interesting numbers there, pretty positive numbers for investors over the past year. And then we'll look at how it compares to other asset classes, but most particularly we'll look at it, how it compares to the stock market. So, it begs the question if we had a superannuation model that included included houses, where would we be without our super fund?
Hang on, Doc. You might have solved our housing crisis. Imagine if the government created a property trust that everyone could put their super in that developed all the shortfall of houses and they got a return on equity. Wow, that'd be, there you go. But I'm sure someone would fuck it up.
I think a few, there's been a few that have created super funds based on the housing market where they bought property. Yep. But what they were doing was they were using the rental income as the income for, and of course it can be problematic because if you're investing in a larger number of properties in terms of land tax, etc., it can become not as profitable if you are compared to being a small scale investor. But you're right, if you could really capture that capital growth and convert it into returns on your super, I think we'd all be having a happy. We'd all be having a happier retirement, Graham. Retirement.
Yeah, well, watch this space because we're going to look at the numbers of that next week. Doc's going to show you. So there you go.
Very excited. Stay tuned, and we'll catch up next week, Graham.
Thanks, Doc. Appreciate it.